to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living. We're the only show on international media dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. And I'm Eileen Dillon, your creator and host. During this live broadcast, we invite you to interact with us on our chat here on theemotionalpro.com or the Blog Talk Radio /FPL page, FPL for Full Power Living. You can also call us toll-free, 800-630-7858, 800-630-7858. Michael Grinder says success still comes down to relationships. How are your relationships serving you? You know, whether you're a classroom teacher, a corporate executive, you serve on a community commission, you volunteer in your church, or you parent your family, what you're going to learn today on Full Power Living will enable you to do it better, much better. You will be enabled to create the relationships you want, improve the power of your influence, and become a charismatic leader or a more charismatic leader, all from what you already know about cats and dogs. Taking your own intuitive knowledge of pets, Michael Grinder helps you easily develop relationships with anyone you meet, and you're also more realistic in your expectations of yourself and of others in the process. So he's here to give us a behavioral model of communication, practical and immediately applicable skills from his book, Charisma. Michael Grinder, who can be found at Michael Grinder, michaelgrinder.com, he's a renowned expert in the power of influence, and he's developed a unique new system of influence through nonverbal communication. You can use his approach immediately to improve your professional and your personal communication because he spent his life studying, dissecting, and teaching the structure that defines the universal patterns underlying all communication. His observational research as an educator on three levels and now as a seminar trainer around the globe, his observational research convinced him that people are in love with the influence of power when they need to be in love with the power of influence. He's the author of 13 books, including Charisma, The Art of Relationships, which we're talking about today. He's a pioneer in teaching others how to perceive nonverbal communication in a group setting, and he was personally trained by two really well-known experts in the field of communication, Carl Rogers and Michael's brother, Dr. John Grinder, who's co-founder of Neuro-Linguistic Programming. Michael is the National Director of Neuro-Linguistic Programming in Education. Michael Grinder, what a joy and pleasure to welcome you to Full Power Living.
Nice to be here. Thank you for letting me share with your audience.
Great. Well, let's start with the issue of power. For example, if a person needs to get a staff to implement a new procedure, or if you need to get volunteers to work together, say in a disaster, or get your kids to complete their homework, or even just tie their shoes, then as the person who needs to get all that done, you have to have some power. And you say power gets results, but compliance is short-term, but influence leads to long-term results. What are we talking about here? What are you talking about?
Well, you certainly gave a wide range of situations where we need to figure out how to get results, and I'm sure anyone out there in our listening audience would identify with one or more of those situations. There's two ways you can look at communication. You have positional power or authority, and then you have personal power or influence, if you want to call it that. To make it easy, what we do is we make a distinction between your position and just your own personal influence. If you're in a situation that is dysfunctional, by all means, take over and control the situation through your authority if you can. But if the situation is functional, it is better to use influence instead of power.
So if things are working well, as opposed to dysfunctional, then you use influence. Yes, that makes sense. All right. But now, charisma is the ability, you say, to influence through relationships. So what you're talking about is in functional situations, you'll have charisma when you focus on influence. Is that right?
Correct. In fact, the quote that you made, Eileen, earlier about we're in love with the influence of power and we need to be in love with the power of influence, that's a quote that I copied off of the Berlin Wall a couple years before it was torn down in 89. And that so moved me that it became my mantra in terms of how I operate and what I teach.
Wow. I wasn't aware of the origin of that. So I'm intrigued by the fact that you differentiated that in dysfunctional situations, or am I getting this correct? In dysfunctional situations, it may be more difficult to have influence?
It's more difficult to have people be motivated, change, produce results from your own personal magnetism. And it's better to have positional power. So whether it's a dysfunctional situation because we have a time crunch or because we haven't operated well, the more power you have, positional power you have, and we could define positional power as the ability to have consequences inflicted on people that are not obeying. Military would be the best example of that.
Mm-hmm. You don't know, I grew up in a military family. I know about this positional authority business. And if you don't have authority through your word and the military, hitting is fine to do also. So
the novel for those readers out there that would really like to bone up on the military is The Great Santini.
Oh, right. Oh, my.
As well as other books by the same author who has spent his life using his own background to try to explain what happens in an authoritative culture as
mm-hmm.
opposed to an influential culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, in my parlance, Michael, we get our homework assignments in our childhoods, and we work on them during our lives. I'm kind of intrigued how it is that of nine children in your family, for example, two of you are interested in nonverbal communication patterns and influence and so forth. And in my family, where there was authoritarianism, I, of course, have spent my adult life working on how to empower myself and other people through ourselves and not having power over others.
Understand. I'm amazed that we have two people coming out of the same family that are as well-known and has done pioneering work. I cannot even compare with what Brother John has done in founding NLP and the influence that has had in the world. And his was more a linguistic approach with some nonverbals. Mine is more a nonverbal approach with some linguistic flavor.
Mm-hmm. But maybe it's because I work as a therapist. I really find what you're talking about very interesting, though, because people, when you talk about dogs and cats, that's very important for people in their everyday life. Let's get to the dog and cat part.
That's what everyone loves, Eileen.
Uh-huh. Just start. I know you have this in your book, Charisma, but for our listening audience, tell us, what can dogs and cats tell us about relationships and power and influence, and how did you get drawn to those?
Good question. The background, Eileen, is that I was trying to think of a way to have people be more tolerant of each other, more humane, and more civil. And I found that every time I used psychological language, I had people drop into their presuppositions or what their connotations of each of the labels meant. And I kept searching for what would be a common analogy that would stay away from already preconceived notions. And I was walking through the kitchen, and my cat, his name is Willie, was on the counter. And Willie looked up at me and knew that Willie wasn't supposed to be on the counter and jumped down. And then as I was leaving the room, I noticed that Willie jumped back up on the counter. And then as I rounded the corner and started towards the living room, my faithful, faithful dog, Mac, was there, and he just wagged his tail and looked up at me like, you're the most intelligent person I've ever met. And I thought, here's the analogy. Take everyone's knowledge of household pets and apply them to people on a scale of at one end being very cat, like a Siamese,
mm-hmm.
and at the very other far end of dogs such as Golden Retriever or Lab. And then you have all kinds of mix in between. And we found that the only big distinction we had to make was that it's a behavioral model as opposed to a personality model like Myers-Briggs or DISC.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not trying to describe how people are all the time. We're trying to describe how people are in very specific situations.
Mm-hmm. How they behave, and therefore how we can read that behavior and know what to do in relationship to it, to our best
Correct.
Advantage.
Correct. It's kind of a read and respond, Eileen.
Uh-huh. So that's how we use it in our real lives. And you go into, in Charisma, you go into different verbal patterns, different ways of standing. Maybe we could start with how do you differentiate between dogs and cats? You gave us the picture of through Willie and Mac. Cats obviously do what they want to do and don't be too concerned about the consequences, whereas dogs are much more cooperative. What are the differences, the main differences between people behaving as dogs or behaving as cats?
Well, there's a variety of ways of trying to detect if someone is operating from their dog or their cat, as opposed to them being a dog or them being a cat.
Hmm.
And what you'll find is it's not only context-specific, like romantically, I'm a dog in my relationship with my wife, Gail, and then in the area of doing business, I'm more the cat, and I make the harsh decisions, the hard decisions, the hard conversations, and she does more of the people skills and does fulfillment orders on our products and just is a great, great office manager in terms of getting along with people. So we may be in one context one way and another context differently.
Mm-hmm.
What we found is that if you watch people, you can watch them by how they stand. The dog people, when they're greeting other people, tend to not assume or presume. They will step aside on the people pass in the hallway. They will tend to smile more. They will tend to have their head tilted. In fact, if our audience wants to do something that's just really quite entertaining, is look at some family photos and see if consistently one member of the family has their head tilted when their picture is being taken, and that would be more of a dog. And notice those people that tend not to smile very much, that is one of the signs that they're more of a cat. Then you can actually watch the weight of the body. When people are standing up, a dog will tend to have weight on one leg more than the other. And, of course, we have to be respectful that as gender differences, females tend to be trained to stand with one leg, weight on one leg more than the other, or one weight on one hip more than the other.
Mm-hmm.
And then cats will tend to stand with both weight on both legs equally. You'll also see when they extend any kind of a gesture, the dogs will tend to have their palms up, and the cats will tend to have their palms down. Then if
no.
you want to go into this voice pattern, a voice pattern of a dog tends to go up and down, and they're very cheerful. They're ideal for answering the phone. They're the first contact oftentimes with the public. They're just great customer service people. Then if you hear people that have kind of a flat voice, it's because they're holding their head still, and they tend to be found in the higher positions of any kind of organization.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I find this interesting because you also correlate at one point in Charisma, you correlate pioneers and settlers with dogs and cats,
right.
with cats and dogs, actually. I said it the wrong way. And I, many years ago, came up trying to understand why I wasn't like other people. I came up with this differentiation between pioneers and settlers. And that pioneers, that I'm a pioneer, you know, I don't mind not being part of the group. I don't want to set up a whole system of rules. I want to strike out and do things and discover new things. Whereas there are other people who want to set up rules and have safety and who might say to me, oh, you're so brave. When I don't feel brave, I just feel dead if I try to be like them. So dogs and cats, not the only way you divide behavior.
Not at all. It's like multiple descriptions of the same dynamics we're talking about. And if you want, anyone who wants to know where their cat is located, is just think when they're willing to risk and when they tolerate tension. Those are the two characteristics of a cat. They mm-hmm. risk higher than the average person, and they tolerate tension more. So cats like it when there is less rules, more chaos, because they can carve out their own niche. Whereas mm-hmm. dogs like tranquility and routine. Mm-hmm. And so there's a part of my world where I like the tension and the risk, especially when I'm writing a new book and I have a deadline. That's a self-imposed risk and tension that I absolutely love. And then there's other parts of my world where I just love routine and tranquility.
Now, that's a really important point, because in charisma, you make the statement that we all have both dog and cat behaviors in us, and we change which one we are manifesting based on changing usually external factors, as I recall.
Correct. And so if you want to take like romance, finance, spirituality, any of the areas of your world, and then think of one other person for each of those areas, and then say, am I more of a dog or a cat compared to this other person in this context? So financially, Gail and I are both very, very dog. Our money is invested by someone else. We don't even want them to send us our quarterly reports. Just once a year, we're required to get together with the person, and we just ignore it and don't want to even know how the stock market is doing. In the area of spirituality, some of us go to a church, or were raised in one, in which the person from the front tells you your relationship with your maker, and that would be more attractive to dog parishioners because their relationship with their maker is being scribed for them. If you go to a church where they say, you have to figure out your relationship with your Lord, that's a cat church, because you're going to have to be self-referenced.
Now that's a very, and let me follow up on that just on a personal note. I was raised in a Protestant church. My family went to church every Sunday, and it inspired me a lot. I'm very spiritual in my orientation. But the more I have come into my own power, the less tolerant I've been of organized religion at all. Can you explain that in dog and cat terms?
Each human is more complex than just labels we can give them. But in general, you could say that different religions, and we'll start there and then we'll go to the individuals that attend. Different religions can be put on the scale of very rigid, and these are the rules and regulations, and therefore dog parishioners would love to have that kind of structure and rigor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you have an open-ended and you have to find your own way in your own spiritual path, that would be more cat. Now, why people choose the dog and why people choose the cat spiritual lifestyle, I cannot explain and don't have an interest in that, because that would go into your realm of psychology. And I'm much more specialized in the area of watching behaviors and knowing how to interact with human beings.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess what piqued me was the fact that you say that the more responsibility one takes, the more cat-like one becomes. And claiming my power has led me to take more responsibility over my own life. Perhaps we can talk just a little bit more about that when we come back, because we're up to our first break. We're talking today with Michael Grinder, who's author, corporate trainer, relationship expert, and influencer. And you're listening to Full Power Living. Stay with us for more influence.
You're listening to Full Power Living. Eileen Dillon.
How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want? To take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes? Or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have just a few announcements. You can talk with us on either of our chats at emotionalpro.com or at blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. If you miss us live, download the podcast from our radio show page or subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. And thank you for telling us and telling your friends and family about all they can discover through Full Power Living and for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the power and mastery of human emotions. I want to let you know, too, you can win a free copy of three of our previous guests' book, Rita Emmett's The Clutter-Busting Handbook, Dr. Brad Swift's Life on Purpose, or Ariane de Beauvoisin's book, The First 30 Days. All you need to do is send me your story of being rejected as part of the challenges of modern day life. Send me a short version by next Tuesday, June 14th. Send it to me at Eileen, I-L-E-N-E, at emotionalpro.com. And the winner's story can be featured on our next show and receive the free book from one of our guests here. Because next week our guest is the Queen of Rejection, Dr. Elaine Savage, and we're going to be talking about how you can deal with the multiple opportunities that today's world gives you to feel rejected. Be sure to join us next week. So now, Michael, you're the author of 13 books, including The Elusive Obvious and Managing Groups, as well as Charisma, which we're talking about today. And your website is michaelgrinder.com. And I want to ask you to step outside of charisma for a moment to talk about your overall goal as a working person in this world and what they can find on your website that could be of benefit to them.
Well, my biggest motivation is to stay in love with my wife.
Ah, that's wonderful.
And I am a romantic dog, and we've been married 34 years.
Wow.
And before I talk about my professional goals, it would be an injustice for those people that actually want to meet me as a human being, not to mention the affair I've been having while married for all these years. Last summer, on our 34th wedding anniversary, as a dog, I arranged to, when she woke up in the morning and walked into the bathroom, I had got some Hershey Kisses, and with the little individual kisses wrapped up in the tinfoil, I wrote out 34 years, and then I put a string from the shower head down to the floor and wrapped flowers around the string, and then had a big, gigantic poster because I'm rather blatant in my admiration and love for my wife. And it said, 34 years, I kiss the ground you walk on and shower you with flowers. And that's my biggest goal in life, is to stay in love. And in no way does that mean that she walks on me in any way, but she is so kind and sweet. In fact, I told my kids recently, if she's not going to heaven, none of the rest of us have a chance. She, as all dogs, you have to be extremely safe in order to let your cat out. And so she lets her cat out with me, and it's a real privilege. Professionally speaking, my goal is to not so much have global or immediate goals with people. I just try to keep exploring patterns of communication, especially on a nonverbal level, that are cross-culturally accurate. So last week I was in Sweden. In April I did a three-week tour of Australia. I'll be speaking in Spain, Germany, Denmark, and the United Kingdom for the rest of this year on various trips. And I'm very interested in cross-cultural communication. And if something is valid, you know it's valid because you can predict what is likely to happen next. And as the famous National Geographic photographer David Hughes once said, if you can't predict what move the animal is going to do next, you won't get the shot, the photograph that you need. So to me, the accuracy of any kind of a model, no matter what labels you use, is does it indicate what is likely to happen next without it being a self-fulfilling prophecy?
That's a tricky little thing. That's very interesting. I hadn't thought about that. And so are you saying that when you go into other cultures, granted the ones you listed are pretty much like American culture overall, but when you go into other cultures, are you saying that the dog and cat analogy holds true?
It does, as far as I've experienced, but you have to figure out first the cultural baseline, such as if I'm in northern Germany, everyone's going to talk like this. No one's going to have a rolling voice. Like when you get down to the Mediterranean, you got to really roll that voice. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
So you have to get first the baseline behavior. And if all Germans talk like this, all northern Germans, then if someone just talks a little bit like, then that's the one who's the dog in that culture. But a dog in a cat culture, when they interact with someone that's from a straight dog culture, they mm-hmm. will seem like a credible person.
Uh-huh.
The cultural baseline has to be taken into account. Otherwise, you misinterpret, and that's what, you know, the famous book, The Ugly American, was about, was you're interpreting behavior you see based on the lens of the culture you come from. And
Right. You'll
never understand another person or a culture if when they talk and when you watch, you interpret what happened. So as a good therapist, if someone says, my dad just died, for you to access the equivalent of what that means for you is absolutely suicide in terms of therapy. You have to stay outside yourself and find out what it means to that other person.
Yes, that's definitely so. All right, thank you. I'd be interested as you. I know everywhere you go, you're studying and gathering data. So I'd be interested in a few years of your traveling like this, what you come up with. Now before the break, I was talking with you. We were talking about religion and so forth, and maybe I can make it a more general question that I was asking. It seems that the greater the level of responsibility I've taken for my life, the more cat-like my behaviors have become. And we were looking at it in terms of religion, but it's in other areas as well. And in charisma, you say the more responsibility you have, the more likely you are to engage in cat-like behavior. So do those two correlate from what you know?
Yes. So if you want, for our listeners, the next time they go to any kind of a corporation where there's at least 3 to more floors of a building occupied by the same company, just get off the floor at one of the lower levels, get off the elevator at one of the lower levels, and you hear most of the conversation, the voice patterns. It'll tend to be kind of a sing-song. It'll be pleasant. It's very easy to listen to. And then the higher up you go in terms of the different floors you get off at the elevator, the more it's a flat kind of level. Bottom line, we got to finish this. We're already behind. Yesterday was due. The higher up your level response, it's like someone having a holiday feast at your house. The more people that are going to come, the more who's ever in charge have to access their cat and direct people in terms of what to do. Don't ask favors. There's too many people. Direct. But that doesn't mean to be mean. It doesn't mean to be harsh. It means to have a voice pattern that's definitive. And most people that have a very pleasant voice, they associate the credible cat voice with being in a bad mood. And it's not. It's just that you have to breathe low when you do it. In fact, if the audience wants to do something that's really, really telling, is use a rolling kind of voice, which is a result of your head bobbing up and down. And then use a flat voice, which is a result of your head staying still. But then do each of those voices with 2 different patterns of breathing. One, breathe very high and do your voice pattern of being a dog approachable. And then do a voice pattern the same way, but be breathing low. And it's actually the breathing that causes the anger and the tension in the recipient. It's not the voice pattern.
You know, that was so helpful to me. Many years ago, I was divorced from my ex-husband, and he brought my son home one day, and his lady friend was in the car, and it was a very hot day, and things were not going really well between us, and a good friend of ours was visiting me, and they got to talking, and I had invited them in because it was hot, and he said no, that his lady friend would prefer to sit in the car. Well, the talking went on for 30 minutes. This woman is sitting in a sweltering car. So I came out and I said in a very firm voice, well, listen, if she doesn't want to come in the house, would you like to come into the yard and I can bring some tea? And he turned and he said, not if you're angry like that. I don't want to be around you. And I was not angry at all, but I was using a declarative kind of cat voice of, well, this is what we can do. Is that what an explanation could be? Is that I had a cat sounding voice? Because the other friend who was there said I did sound angry.
If you pause more when you're definitive, people interpret that you're in control of yourself. Say the same sentence again, if you don't mind, Eileen. Just pause halfway through. Do you mind saying it again?
If she doesn't want to come into my house...
Now, break that apart. That's too long. Do it again.
Oh, if she doesn't want to come inside, would she like to sit in the yard?
And take away the rolling and have it something like this. If she doesn't want to come into the house, would she like to sit in the yard? It'd probably be cooler. Which is different than if I say the whole sentence together. If she doesn't want to come into the house, would she like to sit in the yard? It'd be cooler.
Yeah, well, so tell us more about pauses, because you have a whole chapter dedicated to pauses. Pauses are really important. I hear the difference here. Thank you.
The pause actually is part of how to come across as intelligent. And you don't have to be intelligent for your dog people. You just have to be kind and give them attention. But for cats who love efficiency, bottom line, they usually have more pressure on them than dogs. you have to come across as intelligent for them to let you influence them. And for some reason, when we have a pause in our voice pattern, especially if you could see me, I would gesture, and during the pause, I would hold that gesture and be frozen. And on our website, we actually have a video that's 3 minutes long that shows the different ways of talking with a gesture and how that influences other people. But if you're going to influence the cat, you have to let them be influenced. You can't do it from outside them. There's self-reference, there's independence, and they have to choose you. So every time you pause your voice, even if you have a certain regional voice pattern, it's the pause that makes a difference.
That's interesting. All right. There's a lot for our listeners to explore then. Thank you. Now, suppose a parent is listening, one who has two children, and one child engages in a lot of cat-like behavior and the other dog-like behavior. How would you suggest that the parent could relate to those two children in order to have the necessary influence to be raising them effectively?
Well, you really, you know, it's like the book, The Prophet.
Uh-huh.
You really don't raise your children, you're just with them.
Sorry about that.
and we try our very, very best to have them have certain principles that they'll respond to. The more the child is a cat, the more the cat will decide their own values, much to the chagrin of the parents. And even the dog children, when the hormones start to drop during the adolescent years, because adolescence is a temporary insanity period where the frontal lobe of the human being is missing, and everyone operates as if they're a cat. And absolutely, the hardest thing with teenagers is you can't hold up a mirror and show them how they're acting. Even if you showed them a video footage of them rolling their eyes and turning their head away from the parent, we know that the teenagers go, "That's not me. How'd you do that? How'd you edit that?"
Photoshop.
Yeah, Photoshop. So in general, here's, I think, what the listeners would find helpful. With anyone who's, if you want to use the word defiant, I don't like that term. I'd rather say independent. The more you go visual with your directives that are non-negotiable, the better the relationship is maintained between the parent and the child. The more you go oral, and especially when you make eye contact, the more that exacerbates the situation. So the rule of thumb is management with eye contact, being verbal, are the hooks of escalation. And working a lot with teachers in the classroom, I'm going, "Teacher, don't look at that child." So either have a hand gesture towards the child, saying the child's name, like Frank, Sally, without looking at that child, is so much more effective. But even more effective is if you have something on the board that you can point to that they need to be working on. Because for some reason with not just people, but with actual animals, like if you go to a national park, a lot of times the ranger, when you check in, gives you a piece of paper that says, "If you encounter a bear, don't look at the bear," because it activates chemicals of fight or flight. And it just, not only in the bear, but in you. And my goodness, when an animal, even equestrians will tell you, if you're not relaxed on top of that horse, you're both in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be careful when you do management, when you use eye contact. So even a piece of paper, the latest one that was just so cute was two parents that shared with me that their son had just come back from the hospital, that they'd taken him to the emergency room because he broke his arm. And he started arguing with his parents about he wanted to go out that night. And the doctor said, to rest. And the mom remembered about the axiom about, you know, no eye contact. She grabbed a piece of paper and wrote on the piece of paper, "Darling, I really love you, and you're staying home tonight." Put the paper in front of him and walked out of the room. And children love to engage in kind of mock trials to be future lawyers. And we've got to not help them in that possible career. by engaging them as the adversary.
And that's so much easier said than done. I was a single parent for 20 years and raised a very brilliant young son, and he and I used to go round and round and round until somebody pointed out to me how much he'd love to argue. And all of a sudden, it was clear to me that we weren't really working anything out. We were just arguing, and I don't like to argue, so I refused to do that. And wasn't too many more weeks after that before he said, "How did you get so good?"
There's a great line, you know, that matches Mark Twain about, you know, how dumb my father was when I was 16.
Right.
Arguing with a teenager is like mud wrestling with a pig. You're both going to get dirty, but only one of you is going to enjoy it.
That's really wonderful. I got to keep that one. Well, we're up to our...
I wish I could be the author on that one, Eileen. I'm not.
Well, you got it down, so you can offer it anyway. We're up to our second break, Michael. We're talking with Michael Grinder, who is a relationships, influence, and communication expert and the author of Charisma, The Art of Relationships. So we have more for you on Full Power Living, so stay tuned and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Everybody feels anger, but if you don't learn to deal with it, anger can mess up your life. It can cause you relationship problems, difficulties on the job, or create health problems. If you want a way to understand and work with anger that's simple yet so powerful it helps you to put an end to the specific angers that are messing up your life, then you'll want to get a copy of a mini course I've created for you entitled Reduce Anger Now. With it, I want you to be able to figure out what's stimulating the anger you feel and have an easy way to change that anger so you can dramatically reduce the anger in your life. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, longtime psychotherapist, coach, and anger expert. I've helped thousands of people to master anger, and I want you to begin to become an anger master in your life. Order Reduce Anger Now at the store, www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com. We're back on Full Power Living with Michael Grinder, who is author of The Elusive Obvious, Managing Groups, and Charisma, The Art of Relationships. And you can find him at Michael Grinder, Michael, GRINDER.com on the web. So, Michael, one of the interesting things you say is that there's usually more dog than cat in the world. Do you have an explanation for why that is?
No, I'm really quite boring that way, Eileen. I never ask why. I just try to notice patterns and how to respond, as opposed to why are those patterns true?
Well, there's a level of genius. I know you gave a lot of kudos to your brother John, but there's a level of genius since I've been able to work with you in person to what you do. It's just amazing. To see our own patterns, how easily we fall into dog patterns or cat patterns and not be aware of it, and how it does affect the people around us.
Yeah.
Now you're saying you're going around and teaching courses. That's one way that people could have the opportunity to work with you in person. Are you going to be doing anything in the States coming up?
I appreciate that window. June 27th through July 1st, coming up in a couple of weeks, Portland, Oregon, is our once-a-year open-to-the-public five-day program. It's called Group Wizardry, and you'll find it on our website. And last year we had people from 7 different countries that attended and were anticipating about the same variety of people. And we mention that because it is so great to compare as Americans what other cultures do, and it makes us more culturally sensitive. And it's just a great opportunity to both learn from the participants as well as from myself. Again, June 27th through July 1st, Group Wizardry. And this year, the focus is going to be on presentation skills. And our tagline is that the average communicator informs, the good communicator persuades, and the outstanding communicator inspires. And so we'll teach you how to inspire.
Oh, wow. All right. I'm glad I asked. Now, you spent some time in Charisma talking about the decision-making process, that there are 3 stages, like gathering information all the way to making final decisions, and that dog behaviors are better suited to one part of the process and cat behaviors better suited to the other, and that often cats take up the space in decision making and dogs don't get to participate as much in final decision. Can you talk about that? How does it happen? What's that all about?
Well, what you'll find is that anyone who has kind of a rolling kind of voice, a soft temple, they bob their head, they smile more, those people tend to be outstanding facilitators, and they do very well during the gathering or brainstorming phase of any kind of a decision-making process. And more information is actually brought to the table and elicited from other people when you have that kind of a pattern. And forgive me for stepping on toes. It's something I think we need to voice more openly, and that is gender differences. A female person running a meeting statistically will have more information elicited from the participants than a male. When you finish the gathering stage, you then go into the evaluating and deciding stages of the decision-making process. And that's where the cats take over, because the word decide comes from a Latin word which means to cut. And cats love to cut all the extraneous information and get to the bottom line, you know, what is possible, what can we do, what's it going to cost, what kind of resources. And so they are very definitive in terms of operating as if they know what is best for other people, whereas dogs do not want to presume or impose on other people. So the way to be very charismatic is to know how to let your dog out when we're gathering and being cordial, friendly, collaborative, cooperative. And then when we get to the evaluating, deciding, then switch back to your cat. And therefore, you'll have influence over all 3 stages of the decision-making process.
That's really, I just find that very, very fascinating. Yes. I recognize so much in myself. An important part of all of this is to become aware of it, and I was realizing how much of this I seem to do on an intuitive basis, though I know when I become more aware of it that I will be more effective and more complete.
One of the things, Eileen, that we found is that people need lots of reinforcement, especially in a very busy world. So what we've done is, if people want to go to our website, we have a free educational and a separate location for corporate quote of the day. And what we do is the people sign themselves up, and they will receive Monday through Friday a very nice photograph or picture with a quote with a reference to what book it comes from, just as a reminder of some of the skills that we're talking about today. We also
yeah.
have free screensavers that they can download, and then there's videos that they can study to give them examples of all of the concepts that we're talking about.
Wonderful, and that's michaelgrinder.com, Grinder. All right. So there was one other thing that I wanted to bring out Michael, and that is that you make the point very early on in Charisma that just because we're talking about human behaviors in terms of dogs and cats, it's non-judgmental. We're not trying to put, you're not trying to put people in categories or put one down and one up. It's not about judgment. It's just about observing so that you can work with the system. And I think that's really important to emphasize.
It's really nice when you have people that are mentoring others to understand both their own style of dog-cat degree and the other person. For instance, a parent that is raising a child and their personality is very different than their own, they just tend to misinterpret what is going on. And it's not that it's good or bad. The cats are very, very difficult to raise. There's no question about it. The dogs are so much easier to raise. And for most parents, their goal for their son or daughter is, I just want you to be happy. And if you're raising a cat child, it's not, that shouldn't be your goal, because that's not the child's goal. Your goal for a cat child is, I hope you live in interesting times. And that's very, very different. So the cats are just being dissatisfied is almost a component of their style. And you just have to accept that they like challenges, they like going to the edge, that they really are the pioneers instead of the settlers. And Dr. Livingston one time received a letter from some British people that wanted to send more medical assistance over to help him with his fine work in Africa. And they were indicating to Dr. Livingston, can you please give us the directions on how to get there? And he wrote back, tell them if they need directions not to come.
Right. Well, we're at the end of our show now, and I want to know if listeners to this show remember only one thing. What is the most important thing for them to remember about charisma?
Charisma is having a whole range of behaviors, credible, approachable, dog, cat, and knowing when to act from those behaviors. Charisma is the ability to, when you're doing any kind of management, try to do it through visuals instead of eye contact. Try not to use your voice. Try to have the communication in writing. And when you're doing anything that is not management, then go back to the eye contact and writing. Sorry, the eye contact and a nice voice.
Wonderful. Well, it's, for me, been a delightful challenge to encounter your work and your ideas. Your perspective is very unique and really pushes a person such as myself to think outside of the box. So I want to thank you for writing everything down and for helping the rest of us to grow in influence while we remain not non-judgmental, but also having some power in our lives. And thank you also for being with us today on Full Power Living.
My pleasure, Aline.
I hope you'll return and talk with us maybe about something like the elusive obvious, so we can learn how not to get shot, which is another interesting perspective.
I'd love that. You set that up. I'm more than happy.
Okay, great. Wonderful. Thanks so much for being with us, Michael.
Pleasure.
Next week on June 16th, be sure to join us when Dr. Elaine Savage, the Queen of Rejection, shares her wisdom about how not to be pulled down by the many experiences of rejection that are part of today's world. And don't forget to send your story of rejection in your world today to me, Eileen@emotionalpro.com. Make it short. And then you have the possibility that your story will be featured on the show, and you can also have the opportunity to select a free book from one of our previous show guests, such as Rita Emmett's The Clutter Busting Handbook. And join us every week on Thursdays, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. We look forward to having you with us. Thank you to our producer extraordinaire, Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media, helping me through, especially today, and the technological challenges that I managed to create for myself. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living.